This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Umar Pagan Ampage Pagan, and this is the Evening Edition. Now, history in the form of a textbook looks often like a fixed story of a distant time in the past. But telling lesser-known stories or accounts of people who've played a part in shaping the past but who've been lost in the textbooks can make history a lot more interesting and relatable. Today in the studio, we're speaking with two history enthusiasts who are bringing forth some lesser-known stories about Merdeka. My guests are Tunku Zain Al-Abidin Tuanku Mukhriz, Chairman and Lead Curator of the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu, Co-Founder and Curator of Imagined Malaysia. They're also the organizers of the exhibition titled Jalan Merdeka, Traversing the Routes to Merdeka, that's ongoing at Carcosa and Srinagara. The exhibition, which was put together in the short span of just 3 months, features artifacts and stories throughout our road to independence. Right, guys, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for joining me today. Now, to kick things off, the both of you regularly organize exhibitions and forums pertaining to history. I'm curious as to what your observations have been with regards to Malaysians and our history. Do they care enough? How much do they know? Are they well informed?
The safe answer is that it's a mixed bag. I think you get some people who really, really do care about our history. But I think the more important question is, for the people who do care or claim to care about history, what do they use the history for? And I think you can split this into two or three camps as well. Those who actually have a genuine academic or intellectual interest in history, which are a minority, and those, unfortunately, I think, who see history as a means to justify political or public policy views. And I think you can't unlink racial and sometimes religious rhetoric with these people's views of our own history.
And it's interesting you say that, because it's funny. I think if people actually did pay attention to history and the cyclical nature of even our political history, we'd probably understand the things that are happening around us. You know, we'd be a lot more astute in that understanding, which I find is quite lacking, because, you know, things happen in the news.
True.
And the first thing I think about is I'm just like, well, you know, 10 years ago, almost the exact same thing happened. The names and faces are different. Sometimes the names and faces are the same.
Absolutely.
And it just happens.
Yeah.
So tell me this. When it comes to, I guess, this notion of using history for as a social tool, as a political tool, what is the role of the general populace? I mean, how much responsibility do we put upon them? Because they know what they're fed in 12 years of education, right?
I think one thing is that my experience is a lot different because of Imagine Malaysia. And
Wait, actually, tell people what Imagine Malaysia is.
Okay.
You set up this movement.
Okay.
I'm calling it a movement.
Okay, yeah. In a way, yeah. I like to think that there's enough people to call it a movement. But basically, we are just a small project and we focus on advocacy to create historical consciousness, but awareness about there's such thing as non-textbook narrative about history, and also educating people on the fact that they need to contest and be not afraid to challenge and critically assess the history of Malaysia so that it's more inclusive and answer some of the anxieties that we have today.
And also, it's not just non-textbook, but just non-single narrative. Because for the longest time, if you've just come out of school, you think that there's a single narrative. That's what you're taught.
Yeah, and I think that it's very hard to place the responsibility on the general population, because the way the history is taught and the way the education system is framed is so that you do not question anyway anything that you learn. So I find that, you know, through our forums and things like that, you get a lot of people coming to us and telling, oh, I didn't know that. And, you know, this is really surprising, kind of changed my view on certain things, and I'm relating it to the modern context. And, you know, it's pretty scary when I think about it that I didn't know this. So, yeah.
So with you, Natusha, at which point, or was there a trigger point for you which made you go, oh, wait, there are all these alternative histories, I need to set this thing up?
Yeah, definitely. But I think for me, it was more like, it started in secondary school anyway, when I was studying for SPM, and I was really critical of the textbook, because the way it's written, like, I found there's a lot of That's not a very safe answer, but not that I mind.
That's fine.
I mean,
you're in a safe space.
But you know, like a lot of the narratives that we put out there in the textbook, it can be quite racialized. And also, it seems to omit a lot of things. So the way you're presented also, it's a very distorted image. And you know for a fact it can be distorted if you're critical enough about it. And you're thinking, there's something missing there. And what is it? So I already had that question in mind.
Yeah.
When I was reading the textbook. And also because the fact that the kind of content and how it's balanced out and things like that, it's very questionable. So for me, like, that's what made me want to go and study history and actually find out what are the things that are missing, what are the gaps in the history. So,
Tunku Zain, in your opinion, what are the dangers of this simplistic approach to history or this simplifying of history, which I think a lot of our textbooks tend to do?
Potentially disastrous. I mean, it's particularly given what I said earlier, the link between the use of history to justify current political rhetoric and political, as you say, a political tool. If there's no challenge to that, if there's no widespread challenge to that, then this is the road to fascism. And I think what Natusha has said about, I mean, I fully confess I did not go through the same education system that Natusha did. But when I came back from the UK, where history, well, again, I don't think it's monolithic, but I mean, my educational experience taught me that there are always multiple viewpoints to any aspect of history, and it's right to question, and it's right to appreciate that there are many. And it's also right, by the way, having looked at the evidence, to say, I support this version. But I think it undermines that whole process if, you know, authority says that there is only one version.
Yeah.
And that's why I think it's important for all Malaysians to, one, be exposed to these alternative narratives, and two, to be equipped with the tools to analyze and assess them. And I think that's why, you know, what Natusha's doing is very important.
Yeah. No, I think that's the main reason I love Imagine Malaysia so much, because I think the idea of having any sort of challenge or alternative viewpoint to that top-down approach to history, which is what we've been practicing for the longest time, is incredibly important. But what about resources and access to the average individual, and not just the average grown-up, but the average school-going kid who is shoved this stuff, you know, it's shoved down their throats, right? And are there easily accessible resources for Form 3 students who want to learn about alternative versions of what happened in the 1500s?
I would say, like, honestly, not really. So that's why we try to focus a lot of energy online and trying to put out more information online in the kind of, like, resources. Like, some of the things we do is that we organize reading sessions, but we put our reading material online so that anyone can download it and get access to it. Even at one point, I digitized, like, a book on my own called, it's actually Syed Hussein Alatas' book. It's a lecture called Cita Sempurna Warisan Sejarah. And it's actually a seminal text that no one really has access to. But what I did was that I actually made a soft copy of it and distributed online. Of course, with the permission of his son.
I was just going to say pirate.
His son was fine with it. And, you know, I realized that it actually gave a lot of access to even younger people who are inclined or interested to find out more about alternative readings of history and things like that. And but in reality, actually, it's quite a challenge for me and our team as well, because of generally, like, the way that public school students are, you know, taught and the kind of exposure they have, it's very limited.
We're speaking today to Tunku Zain from the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu from Imagined Malaysia, organizers of the Jalan Merdeka exhibition at Carcosa in Srinagara. After this, they'll be sharing some of the artifacts they found for the exhibition, as well as some stories which have been long lost in our history books. Stay tuned. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Break from monotony. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Umar Paganampake Pagan, and I'm speaking today with Tunku Zain, chairman of the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu, co-founder of Imagined Malaysia. We've been talking about alternate histories and their exhibition titled Jalan Merdeka, Traversing the Routes to Merdeka, that's currently ongoing at Carcosa and Srinagara. Tunku Zain, you're also the chairman and curator of the Asian Heritage Museum. And I wanted to talk to you about, I guess, the importance of artifacts and heritage sites in generating interest and also the study of history, right? Because we have a very bad relationship, I think, with museums. As kids, we get taken there on school trips. And then after that, you know, we go to a Hantu exhibition, which we're all very excited about, but that's about it. I mean, there's very little, compared to the UK, for example, there's very little constant engagement that's going on between the public and these spaces of study.
Sure. I mean, I don't want to comment too much on the, you've expressed your experience of museums in Malaysia, but I think the...
But those Hantu exhibitions are great. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. I love them.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that we're going to be doing at Kakusa and Srinagara is exactly having more interactive, more engaging exhibitions. And I think you're probably going to ask me about Jalan Merdeka, but if I can preempt you, you know, this is our first sort of full exhibition that we're doing under the group. And we are blessed to be able to do it at Kakusa and Srinagara, two buildings that played such a big role in the road towards Merdeka.
And of course, for those who don't know, I mean, you have use of this space for about 3 years, am I right?
That's right. Well, hopefully longer than that, but 3 years to begin with. And what we will be seeing over the next 3 years is special exhibitions just like this Jalan Merdeka one, but also we're going to have a permanent gallery of artifacts of the region. We're going to be having events related to the provenance of artifacts, and we're going to have, you know, other activities, a glimpse of which you can see with Jalan Merdeka, that really enable access to everyone. I think one of the problems with heritage buildings in Malaysia is they're often converted into very elitist sites, such as, you know, hotels or fancy restaurants. And, you know, there's a certain logic to that. But I think we're very much inspired by the best practices, as you say, you know, in the UK, even in Singapore, even now in Penang and Kuching,
where
you
right.
have heritage buildings which have been opened up and shared with the public, and there's something for everyone. So that's really the ethos that we want to have.
And I think it's really important, especially given that we have such little access to this sort of thing regarding our own backgrounds and history. I remember when the Peranakan Museum first opened in Singapore. It was an incredibly frustrating experience for me because I went there and it was beautifully curated and it had all these interactive elements. It was wonderful. And I just looked around and I'm like, all of this is from us and it's in Singapore. We could do this. We should do this, right? And I think that's important. I mean, there's so much you can glean from a textbook. But until you go to the Natural History Museum and see that dinosaur up close, it's something else entirely, right? So talk to me about what you have at the moment in for Jalan Merdeka. I mean, what kind of cool artifacts and things do you have on display?
I have to say, and this is, we have to acknowledge the great cooperation we've had with Jabatan Museum Malaysia, Arkib Negara, Perpustakaan Negara Malaysia, Film Negara Malaysia as well, and also partners such as New Straits Times, CIMB Foundation is our major partner, NILEX and others. But, you know, these, especially the agencies under the Ministry of Tourism and Culture, they actually have a wealth of artifacts that they haven't, for whatever reason, displayed before. So we've managed to get, for example, in our emergency section,
right.
There's this... What's this? There's a little red book, which I think is pretty incredible.
The police museum loaned to us some of the propaganda books by the Malayan Communist Party.
Fantastic.
So they're on display there now.
Yeah. And then there's a pen which was used to sign the Federation of Malay Agreement 1957.
Fantastic.
Which was loaned to us. So I think there's a lot of cool artifacts which has previously not been on display, or at least not publicized, you know, being on display. And coming back to the point about, you know, this special aspect of the site, King's House, as it was known then, was the venue of the signing of the Federation of Malay Agreements 1948 and 1957. And we have recreated the room so that it chronologically follows. So we start the exhibition at Kakusa. And Kakusa was built, of course, for the chief administrator of the Federated Malay States, Frank Swettenham. So you signed the Treaty of Federation in 1895. Frank Swettenham starts building it in 1896, has his fancy ball party in 1898. That's his housewarming party. And so we start our Jalan Merdeka exhibition there, and we explain the economic incentives for the creation of the Federated Malay States. And then we come to Natusha's story about, there was economic migration as a result. What did these communities think about the future? How did they want to organize themselves in this land that they were now in? So we tell that story of political consciousness, wow, how World War II catalyzes and interacts with that formation of consciousness, and then the return of the British, the BMA, the Malayan Union, how that then turned into the Federation of Malaya. And by this stage, we're now at Srinagara, where a lot of the events pertaining to the repeal of the Malayan Union in favor of the Federation of Malaya, its subsequent Merdeka. And I think the point which we want to really put through in that room, the signing room where this treaty signing took place, is that 31st of August was great, but you wouldn't have had that without the 5th of August, which is when the agreement was signed.
Right.
That was the legal enabler of what happened 3 weeks later.
Wow, 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 wow. That's really exciting. And, you know, and I don't know if you guys have an answer to this question, but in all of this, I think one important thing that often gets lost in our consumption of history are these stories of individuals. And mm-hmm. I guess the Malayans at the time, is that something easy to come by, the oral histories or what the everyday Malaysians spoke about? Natusha, have you found, were there old books in our national archives or newspaper articles about what the common man felt and thought?
Actually, I would say that it's still not one thing that the great challenges was, of course, that it's difficult to get access to the everyday notion of like people's history. So what we have is like a history from below perspective where we are looking at the oppositional forces towards like elites or aristocrats. So I guess that's the most we've done. And one thing was that we looked at how there are different like political organizations that emerge, such as the Parti Kebangsaan Melayu Malaysia, PKMM, and also how they emerged from the Malay Muslim Intelligentsia movement called Kaum Muda, and how these kind of discourses would run through and also like evolve and emerge, and you know, there's amalgamation of like Islamism and socialism, modernism and things like that happening, as well as cultural notions of like the political unification of Malaya and Indonesia.
Yes, so,
like course. Melayu Raya. Then you have, of course, like the Indian rubber tappers who came in and started to politically organize themselves and the kind of struggle that they went through. And of course, this was like one of the most challenging parts of the exhibition, was definitely finding the material and extracting those experiences and sentiments. So I was very lucky that during my research, I bumped into, I came across this website called malaya-ganapati.com.
Okay.
And basically, this researcher wrote about the stories behind the Indian laborers and how they fought in strikes and things like that. So it was really like tumultuous and chaotic experience, and how like the first president of the Pan-Malayan Federation of Trade Unions was an Indian man named S.A. Ganapati, and how he was executed by the British because he was seen as too strong of an influence, and how that execution led to a huge international outcry from trade unions in Britain, in Singapore,
wow,
in Australia, and, you know, a lot of other places. So things like that.
And that is not in our history books at all.
Yeah, it's not in the history books. So we put it out there, and to do justice to these people who have not been spoken of at all.
Okay, I mean, even when you look at the official narrative, there are things which are surprisingly omitted as well. I mean, if you look through the old Hansards of our Dewan Rakyat, our own parliament, there's some amazing stuff in there which even ministers and MPs of the ruling party at the time were saying things which perhaps might not be well received by their sort of successors now. And I think it doesn't take much to extract them. Well, indeed, a couple of books have been done exactly on that. But I think what we found doing in this process is that it doesn't take so much effort to discover things which are easily disseminated and shared. So I think that's been a real learning experience for us, and we hope to repeat this as often as we can.
We're speaking with Tunku Zain from the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu from Imagined Malaysia. More on the Jalan Merdeka exhibition after the news. Don't go anywhere. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Bringing fresh meaning. BFM 89.9.
This is the Evening Edition. I'm Uma Paganampake Pagan. My guests today are Tunku Zain, chairman of the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu, co-founder of Imagined Malaysia. They've been with us today to talk about their efforts at bringing lesser-known stories about Merdeka to the fore through the exhibition titled Jalan Merdeka that's currently being held at Carcosa and Srinagara. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you also have at the exhibition, was it alternative flags or proposals for flags or for the country?
Yeah, like there's, of course, we have the PKMM flag, sorry. I think it's called Sang Sangke Mela. Yeah, and of course, it's like inspired by the Indonesian flag that they have today. And, you know, it has stars, like a certain number of stars to represent like certain values or ideas about the unification. And we also like, talked about how the Federation of Trade Unions wanted a unification with Malaya and Singapore rather than Malaya and Indonesia. So there's all these contestations, of course, and we don't really talk about it, that everyone had a different imagination of what
Malaysia should be, right? Instead, we get this very simplistic notion of, yet again, oh, look, Sabah Sarawak, come on in, Singapore,
exactly.
Hi. And it was done in 63. I mean, it's so basic, the kind of stuff in our history books.
Exactly. So we need to show that kind of complexity.
No, you're right. And I think if people experience this and they experience the various stories, I mean, what you told me about the trade union is a fascinating story. You know, it's the kind of story that should be in a film. I mean, we miss out, you know, Saida Rustam's got that great book, Rosalie, about the founding of our national anthem. And you read that book and it's just, you know, it's 250, 300 pages of a wonderful story about the founding of this song. Instead, we sing that song every day for like 12 years of our school career and we know nothing about it,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, in fact, about at the end of the exhibition, you get a little bit on exactly what you said, the history of our national anthem. So that insider actually provided that sort of conclusion to the exhibition, which is the story of our national anthem. So, and I should also mention that at the beginning of each building at Carcosa and Srinagara, we have a brief history of the buildings that Mariana Issa, the architect and conservator, has also done up together with the Putubuhan Architect Malaysia. So we have all these different aspects of our histories, not just the story towards Merdeka that forms the backbone of this exhibition, but also I think we want to educate people on the history of the buildings and share a bit about our anthem as well.
Yeah. I'm assuming you've got droves of school kids coming?
I think
soon we will. I mean, we've had a trickle, but I think
is that a difficult process, like to convince the Ministry of Education to get schools to bring
conversation
the kids?
Is ongoing, but right. I think the difficulty is more logistics, frankly, because it's not the easiest place to get to. Yeah.
No, because yet again, this kind of thing just needs to start at schools, right?
Yeah, it's very true.
But I have to say, I mean, I'm very encouraged by the response we've had from the institutions which you might think might not be so keen on this. I mean, I mentioned, you know, the feedback that we've got and our partnerships with the government agencies, but it's really very encouraging. And we've had a lot of soldiers come and have a look at it, which I think is very interesting. We have in our emergency room, we've put, I think that Hasna Hussein has put on this exhibition where enclosed in one room, you have veterans of the Royal Malay Regiment together with soldiers of the Malayan Communist Party. And we're trying to say, look, people had different motivations. And certainly, I mean, you know, I would take the view that certainly communist terrorism was abhorrent. But I think that the point is to
not paint them as cartoon villains.
They were composed of individuals who had different motivations, who had a particular context and particular choices, I suppose, and went one way or another. And was sucked into a wider conflict, which they may not have intended.
And I think that's the one thing that is severely lacking in all of our experiences with history in this country is nuance, which is what I think the both of you have kind of brought to the table with this exhibition and with Imagine Malaysia. And here's hoping some of that sticks. And at least influences the conversation, right? So before I let you go, let me ask you, how do you think, I mean, this is one way, and I think this is a very important way to get Malaysians engaged in history and other versions of history. What are the ideas you got? How do we get people talking about these things and not just, oh, look, it's August 31st. Oh, look, it's September 16th, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things we're doing with this exhibition as well is we have a whole suite of events that are accompanying it. We've got documentary screening. So we've had, I think many of the listeners out there would have seen The Road to Nationhood Part 2. So we've got Road to Nationhood Part 1. We had a Q&A with Yazid.
Oh, are we having?
The director. The director, yeah. Yes. And then we've had old propaganda films by the Malayan Film Unit, which is now Film Negara Malaysia. We've had a joget party. We've had, of course, Imagine Malaysia forums. We have colouring competitions for younger Malaysians. So I think what we're trying to say is, look, come and express or explore your patriotism at Jalan Merdeka, at Kakusa and Srinagara. And there's something for everyone. I think that's what we're trying to say.
So that's going on until the end of this month.
End of October, in fact.
Oh, yay. Yeah, excellent. Yeah, it's going on until the end of October. And then can you tell us what's happening next in the space? Or is that
certainly
a surprise?
Okay. So this weekend, we have a screening of Ola Bola on the lawn of Srinagara and preceded by a little footy competition. So kick your ball. I'm not a footy fan at all, but I understand a lot of people enjoy this. And we have a sing-along with the Selangor Philharmonic Society. We had our first one yesterday and it was very, very well received. So we're going to do it again next Sunday. Please visit our Facebook and Instagram. I think it's Jalan Merdeka or Jalan 57, Jalan 1957 on Facebook and Jalan Merdeka on Instagram to find out the latest on the schedule.
Very cool. Very cool. Natusha, what's next for Imagine Malaysia?
Well, we have our final forum at Jalan Merdeka coming up, which is on the 23rd. And it's going to be focused on the history of the literati in Malaysia. And we are inviting former famed literary figures Raja Ahmad Aminullah and others, and also scholars, academics who have focused on this topic as well to discuss and interact with the audience. Imagine Malaysia, well, we hope that next year, we venture more into multimedia. So I'm currently working on a video series. We're collaborating with Project Dialogue. And we are going to make short 5-minute videos AJ style plus.
Everyone loves those AJ plus videos.
Yeah, it's really good. It's really good. And we thought that's the best way to reach out to younger people as well who are interested to watch videos rather than reading anyway. So, yeah. And also, we have workshops coming up. And we also plan to work with more teenagers. The other day, I actually brought 20 homeschooled children to Kakosa for the exhibition. And I gave them a tour of the place. And it was very well received. And I think there's potential there for Imagine Malaysia as well. So.
Very cool, very cool. So I have a suggestion before I let you go on a competition that you can do, not just for kids, but for adults as well, right?
Okay.
Who can freehand draw the best version of that star on our flag? It is absolutely impossible to draw freehand. As a kid in school, when they would ask us to draw the flag, was impossible. So there you go. 14-pointed star, best freehand competition. Tweet your entries to BFM Radio. That's what I'm saying. Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me. And all the best for Jalan Merdeka, for Asian Heritage Museum. I'm really excited about this. And Imagine Malaysia.
Thank you.
I've been speaking today to Tunku Zain Al-Abidin Tuanku Mukhriz, chairman of the Asian Heritage Museum, as well as Natusha Naidu, co-founder of Imagine Malaysia. Find out more about the exhibition Jalan Merdeka, Traversing the Routes to Merdeka, by searching Jalan 1957 on Facebook or Jalan Merdeka on Instagram. If you missed any part of this program, you can download the podcast on our BFM app. That's available on the Apple App Store and on Google Play. This is the Evening Edition on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.